Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, here to break down Six Nations Week 2. And what a weekend of rugby it was. Just a quick reminder, you're listening, I imagine, on Apple Podcasts, on Acast, or on other podcast providers like Podbean, Stitcher.
One of them.
But thank you. Hit subscribe. Tell your mates. And thank you very much. I'm Tim. JB is here.
Hello, Timothy.
Phil is there.
Hello, Tim.
Now, I just want to highlight the commitment. Just big us up for a minute.
Well, yes. I mean, I'd say big us up a bit, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, because...
No, actually, that's not fair. You've been working all weekend.
And that's fine. The time now is 12:49 a.m. on Monday, the 12th of February. JB and Phil have just jetted in and taxied across from Madrid and Liverpool back to the rugby dungeon.
Yeah,
I've been on a plane as well today.
Ooh,
from Heathrow to Manchester. Not quite as long a journey. But we'll find out exactly what they were doing there in a little bit. But
yes.
Firstly, just to check, did you manage to catch all the Six Nations rugby? The majority of it.
Not all of Ireland, Italy. Yeah, who cares?
We were working hard for the first half of Ireland, Italy, but we caught the end of it and we watched all the highlights and caught up with it.
But watched
everything else live.
Well, obviously the problem with this podcast is going to be there wasn't too many big talking points to get our teeth into.
Ooh.
We're going to have to start England-Wales, aren't we?
What a game. It was such a strange game. It was such it was so tactical. So strategic, actually. So many conflicting thoughts on this game.
But yeah, where do we start with this game? Do we start with the start?
Start before the start.
Okay.
Because before the start, it was like the gut punch of Lee Halfpenny not being available, which was, I think, basically... Everyone's hearts just sunk immediately. Tim, what was your first radio job?
It was weekends on GWR Bristol, which is now Heart.
Did you get paid for it, your first one?
Not very much, but yeah.
Wasn't it late at night?
The first one I did up here in Manchester was an overnight, Saturday night into Sunday morning, 6-hour-long show.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. 1 a.m. till 7 a.m.
Because I'm struggling to find the right words now. I don't know how you would do it if you were live on air. At least we can edit this.
How I would do what?
As in just talk for 6 hours interspersed with some music.
Oh, I was going to say, fortunately, it's that, there are people that do 4-hour overnight speech shows that don't have songs that they can save themselves with when they've run out of things to say. I don't know how you do that. But...
very conflicted about this game is what I was going to say. And then, so obviously, Lee Halfpenny dropped out.
Yeah.
Infected foot. And it took down the enthusiasm for the Welsh fans, certainly myself, who... was backing Wales this particular time.
Or gave you a 10%. Convenient excuse should England have won. I'm talking about how it was before the game.
There wasn't much hope that Anscombe was going to come in and replace Lee Halfpenny. But, hats off to him. He was brilliant for the last 20.
I thought Anscombe was one of the better players on the pitch.
From
both teams. The only area that I think Wales did miss Halfpenny was the... taking a high ball in the aerial battle.
Yeah.
Which I think the England back three were outstanding at. That was probably their strongest element of their game.
And England's kicking game, they clearly, from minute one, and I think it's the second Halfpenny was out, they said, right, dial up that kicking game. Let's just get at them.
Do you think it's effective?
Yeah. Well, both tries came from that sort of pressure.
Okay, so the first try I thought was a very different type of kick to the one that they were doing most of the game.
Oh, so, but they were finding grass all game long.
Yeah, they were.
Yes, that is fair.
And so Jamie and I were looking at it. We actually thought during the game they were trying to find grass and keep the ball in field.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's a lot of times when they put a lot of bombs up, and they also put a lot of kind of diagonal kicks, which would normally be trying to get the ball into touch so Wales have got a line out on their 5-metre line, on their 10-metre line. They were stopping it. So there's numerous times where Farrell could have put enough power to put the ball out, but he actually kind of landed it in that, in the 20 metres from the touchline in the 22 to almost force Steph Evans or Anscombe, or actually more frequently Patchell, to have to kick the ball out.
And this was like a conspiracy theory. So my thought about this was they're doing this not to get the benefit from this, but waiting for the counter from Wales to get the benefit from that.
Well, I just thought actually they went Steph Evans, Gareth Anscombe, Josh Adams, very, very inexperienced test back three. Yeah. Let's get at them. And they did. And I
don't think they did.
They totally did. And both and Wales wingers looked like rabbits in headlights.
No,
they did. They were terrified of those kicks. They were absolutely... They didn't know what to do.
I think in the contested...
That's where the game was won.
No, it definitely wasn't. In the contested aerial battle, England hammered Wales. I don't think there's much of a doubt on that. But how effective were those kicks? Well, they didn't give away any penalties. They didn't give away much ground from it.
Well,
penalties
is a completely different
situation. Yeah, if they're trying to play out. England scored... I mean, that first try was just pure class from Owen Farrell to look up and find that space and to execute the whole thing. And then the second try, they were beating down the door.
But look again, and Adams was completely out of position. And I think as a direct result of the fact that they didn't know where to stand, what to do, because they were just at sixes and sevens.
No, I didn't see that.
Their positioning was all over the place.
So I think England were trying to bait them to drop that man deep permanently, and they weren't taking that bait. And if they had, you'd have seen a different approach from England then. That's what I think the plan was.
Go back and look at the tries. I think you'll see they were just woefully out of position, and I think it was because they just and they took advantage of a weak area for Wales in terms of experience. And I say fair play for that one. It's weird though. All the talk we have of England as the finishers, and the last 20 minutes they only scored points in the first 20 minutes. It was quite weird.
Yeah.
Wales and grew into it.
Yeah, England did struggle. It was a bit worrying that it did look like fitness from England,
yeah,
which is supposed to be one of the areas where they're particularly good at.
Eddie Jones did say, well, that was a 6-day turnaround.
Yeah.
Oh, behave.
Away in Italy as well.
No, travel.
Yeah. Eddie Jones will give that excuse.
But it could be going back to what we talked about, English clubs in Champions Cup. These players involved for England have been...
They've played a lot of rugby.
They've played more rugby than any other players in the Six Nations.
That for me would be a better excuse for him.
Yeah.
But I'm not interested in making excuses. Just remember that, Wales fans.
Well, yes. I mean, I look at this game from this point of view if I was an England fan. England won that game basically because Sam Underhill might have made the greatest tackle of all time.
I've been thinking about that. We should rename him Wonderhill.
Wonderhill, yeah.
That was incredible tackle to stop what would have been a remarkable try.
I have never seen anything like it. Ever. Ever. Ever.
It was the way that... So Scott Williams did exactly what he had to do. He knew that he was going to get hit, so he slid early. But Underhill just anticipated it, scooped him and rolled him.
It was the control with which he grabbed his hip and pulled with his hand. It was incredible.
I don't think... So when I saw it, I hit the table with fury because I had a bet on. And then you watch it again, you think that there was nothing Williams can do better in that situation.
He's exactly a bloody
strong bloke as well.
Yeah, I get that. But the more I watch it, the more I wish Underhill had missed him, because the more I think he's not making it to the try line.
He dived early, didn't he?
He did early, and Twickenham is particularly solid surface, apparently. And
well, they have got like a 5% artificial fibre weave in there. It was pretty greasy, though, wasn't it?
It was, but he seemed to hit the ground and slow. The more I watch it, the more I think he's not getting to the try line, and I'd love to have seen that.
Yeah, I mean, if he does slow considerably, maybe he might have been better off to just run it in.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
But so you mentioned that as one of the things that prevented a Wales win. Another, Alan Wynne-Jones' decision-making.
But Alan...
I'm so glad you said that, again. Phil. Again, because we talked about this last year.
We did. So, and Alan Wynne-Jones, so I think he's playing superbly.
I thought he was the best player on the park.
I thought he was outstanding.
Well, Owen Farrell was the best player on the park.
Nah.
So, 100%. But anyway.
Yeah. Alan Wynne-Jones, he's playing superbly. His stuff with the media this week was superb.
It was outstanding, yeah.
His reaction to the Eddie Jones criticism, calling him Uncle Eddie, I thought was a brilliant way to handle it and completely diffuse anything that Eddie Jones
even
has said.
I loved his little slap that he gave Maro Itoji at one point. That was great.
Such a wind-up.
Yeah.
That was the kind of thing that if Itoji was on the verge of losing his cool...
That would have been it. He would have lost it.
So Alan Wynne-Jones, virtually everything he's done has been brilliant. There was at least a couple of kickable penalties that he turned down and went for the corner.
Yep.
And
he did this last year.
Yeah. And hindsight is a very easy thing, but the decisions, he got them wrong.
But think about Robshaw, the amount he got absolutely mullered for it.
Yeah, but they were second favourites for the World Cup at the time.
Well, yeah.
They should both be
criticised heavily for it. Alan Wynne-Jones should be criticised.
No one's mentioned it, and I've got it written down on my bit of paper, and I'm really glad Phil brought it up because I think Alan Wynne-Jones should get criticised for that. Leadership or well those decisions I think he should because it was wrong,
and that's at least probably more
they go in at like 9-12 at half time. It's a different game entirely, isn't it?
Well, let's talk about the other big decision then, the try that would never was for Gareth Ainscombe.
Well, it's not a knock on, that's to start with.
Well hold on, let's take this in order. So the first thing that I've seen loads of people saying is, oh, that cost us the game. Can we just remember the referee was playing advantage, from which they then got a penalty. So at best, even if you get the touchline conversion,
it's four points.
You still are behind. It's 12-10, I think, or... Yeah, 12.
It'd be an additional 4 points.
It'd be additional four points.
If you slot the
touchline
conversion.
You don't win the game from that try. And also, I would just point to guys like Rob Baxter... I'm just trying to think. Mark McCall, and the way they respond to similar situations is to say, well, we didn't take care of business ourselves, so
we've
got ourselves to blame, and there's far more weaker control than we don't want to leave it in the hands of a TMO.
Yeah.
So I think it's weak-minded to go so big on it. I understand why, but...
Who are you talking about?
Have you looked at social media in the last couple of days?
Have you made up an enemy? Have you got an imaginary enemy in your mind that you're taking down here?
No, it's the general outrage of social media.
Have you been reading the Wales Online?
And Wales Online.
Wales Online.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Well, if there is outrage, and I haven't seen it, it's misplaced.
There is a lot of outrage, I can confirm, yeah.
It's just, I don't think it's a knock-on. I think it's probably a try.
So firstly, on the grounding... Yes, Ainscombe. Now some people are going, oh, well, there's no downward pressure, there's no control. Where, if you're in possession of the ball, you have to place the ball with control and remain in control.
Yep.
If the ball is loose and all you have to do is touch it, that's the law.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So on that basis, it's a try.
Try. Yeah, the grounding, which that was the decision that the TMO... He got that decision wrong.
He came 12,000 miles to get that decision wrong. So.
Thanks. Come again.
However, the new piece of evidence, which was a potential knock-on from Steph Evans, it ricocheted off his knee, but has been shown to have touched his finger as well.
But if it touches his finger first, then his knee, it's fine.
No.
Now, we were discussing this in the airport.
No. I know, because what you're suggesting is it's like kicking a ball.
Yes. Yeah.
No.
Because it's got to be under control first.
You have to physically drop the ball deliberately for it not to be a knock-on. You can't just touch it. Because if you knocked it on with your hand but then reached out and kicked it with your foot, that wouldn't be a fair kick. That would be knock-on. You have to drop it onto your foot or knee.
Yeah, because I'm certain that I have knocked it on and kicked it and then it it's come back from a scrum. I'm sure I've seen that.
So I'm actually calling it that, in my opinion. And again, this is, it's such tiny margins, and I don't blame the TMO for not spotting
it.
But, knock on. It's a knock on. So just back in your box.
Yeah, even with the blown-up pictures at, you know, 1/20th speed, you still have to look at it 3 or 4 times and think, you know, are we sure his finger didn't touch the side of his thigh? You know, I'm thinking,
But if we just deal with facts, so I'm not saying, I just said, I don't mind the TMO didn't clock that, but if it can just stop the outrage and just simmer Wales fans a little bit who feel aggrieved, it was a knock-on.
Yeah.
It was a knock-on. Let's all calm down.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, let's all calm down anyway, because good teams...
I think you need to calm down, Tim.
Yeah. Sorry. You've been out... I wish I was out of the country the last day or so. I really do. Jeez.
Right. So to summarise, I think, on the performances, OK, Wales did far better than most people expected. I expected them to win.
Yep. Oh, right. OK. So
they didn't meet my expectations. I thought England did pretty well, but I'm still going with downfall 2018.
Doubling down.
Hmm. And it's based on this. I mean, did you see anything? Did you think England had improved on last year?
They've continued from last year, as in keep winning games.
So, okay, so if you're taking the they keep winning games routine, that's fine.
Well, that's how you win a World Cup.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you can do that. I think most coaches and most people involved in the game would be looking at the performance rather than the result. Like, that is a very the Rob Baxter mentality. It's all about the performance, not the result. And if you look at that, do you see England developing? I honestly don't think I do.
Do you see them going backwards?
They're not going forwards. I don't know if that's the same thing.
Yeah, but not going forwards from a position of losing one game in 2.5 years isn't a bad position to stay in.
No, but when you're watching these games, like I watched France-Scotland today, and you're seeing how the Scarlets are playing and how that's rubbing off on Wales. And I'm looking at the two favourites for the tournament, which are obviously England and Ireland, and I'm thinking, these guys aren't quite keeping up. They're playing in a certain muscular, powerful way, but they're not really embracing the fast offloading game, which seems to be developing everywhere else. So if they are just staying still, maybe they are going backwards. I mean, Ireland were nearly caught completely unawares by France. So,
well, I will say that I think Wales now are a better team than they were 2 years
Wales
ago.
Wales nearly, on the weekend, scored one of the best international tries of all time.
So if the point is valid that if England are staying still, and I'm not saying they are...
Static 2018. If they're not downfall. Yeah.
If they're static and everyone else is improving, or certainly some of their competitors are improving, then they are going backwards relatively. Now, it's an interesting question, the improving thing. I think there's some areas where you can say they are definitely improving, and that is, I think, the depth of their squad.
It's huge.
So 2 years ago... Well, in the World Cup, it was Billy Vunipola and Ben Morgan as the first two choice number eights, for example.
Yep.
And now you've got Billy, Nathan and Sam Simmons. So that is a marked improvement. And that's just one example of a position. There's the same in multiple positions
across the
park.
They're blooding new tight heads.
Yeah. Tight heads, loose heads, maybe not hookers.
Maybe they've
got
scrum-offs.
They've possibly got the best stable of locks in the world.
Yep.
They're bringing guys like Underhill, who was superb when he came on, and Simmons.
He's amazing.
And their back line, apart from 12, they've got options in every position.
Yeah.
And of 12, I guess you've got T.O.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I was watching their attack is of particular concern to me, as it doesn't really exist. They were ponderous, they were slow, they were very shallow, they seemed
I'm just not having this. We've just beaten Wales. Forget the score, it's Six Nations, and we've just won two games.
Yeah, but what you're forgetting, Tim, is this narrative...
Does it fit my narrative or not?
Yeah.
That's what... You've not put it through the filter.
Yeah.
The so news filter.
JB being negative fits his previous narrative.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
It's got to continue.
Yes.
All right. Well, I look forward to him eating his words. Somehow, England will have 4 good wins and narrowly lose to Ireland, and they will go, see, I told you, downfall 2018.
I can see a scenario... I don't actually think England are going to win the game, or win all of the games. They won't get a Grand Slam, in my opinion.
Yeah, Murrayfield's going to be a tough ask.
But I can see a scenario if England did get a Grand Slam, and JB would still be going on the because they're not playing the right rugby, or they almost lost to Wales.
They're going to collapse before this before the World Cup. They're going to collapse. I predict this year.
Just a few tweets we've had in. Max says, Rogamol, and we don't have to go into any of these. Rogamol says, when will Wales learn to kick the ball to touch? Yeah, their kicking game was awful. I think we covered that one off. Nick Checkets, how did England manage to look so good in attack but not put pressure into points?
I don't think they did.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. Yeah, I don't think they look great in attack. There were moments, but they were few and far between.
What was the best attacking moment? Probably the offload for the try. That was very nice bit of skill, actually.
The offload for the try, or the kick across from Faz for the other try.
Yeah, two individual brilliant moments.
I do like that Ford Farrell thing. Just seems they're telepathic, those two.
No, they're not.
I really like them.
I don't think they look impressive at all doing that. I think so much has been made of this wraparound as if no one's ever done it before, and they don't even do it well.
The bit that they do well, which they've done in both the games, is so I've. Obviously, with Farrell playing 10, you never see him picking a line off a 10.
No.
But he does that very well for Ford, and Ford creates the gap and he hits it.
I'll tell you another downside, which I'm very worried about, is actually Farrell at 12, full stop. His tackling is not good enough.
What are you talking about? He caused several turnovers from big hits.
Well, that's a problem. He is...
It's a real problem that he's hitting too hard.
Okay.
So, it's the erraticness. So I am with JB on this a little bit, on Owen Farrell. He tries big hits too frequently and he ends up missing. So he occasionally, like the one on Shingler, where he forced a turnover. Do you know what his stats were in terms of tackles?
No.
Anyone want to guess?
Not sure. He missed at least three.
He gave a world-class performance, would be my caveat, but go on.
He missed 7 tackles.
Okay. What?
Yeah.
That's not good enough.
That's not good enough.
Okay, he was man of the match, world class player. Mike Brown was man of the match.
But who's your man of the match?
Owen Farrell.
Man of the match of your heart.
So I thought Owen Farrell did have overall a good game.
Yeah.
But some of his kicking wasn't amazing. But there was more good than bad.
Yeah.
And some of his lines were great. Some of his passing was good. Tackling is an area of concern for me, and I really like Faz as a 12.
I think I do like a lot of what he brings. In fact, I love almost all of what he brings. He's a phenomenal player. There's something about his mindset, because he's so combative that I think he goes hunting for those hits rather than just thinking about completing his tackles.
Okay. Imogen says, who hates the media more, Eddie Jones or Donald Trump?
Which media? Because if it's Wales Online, it's us.
Did you see any of Eddie Jones' post-match chats?
I've seen the Chris Jones full interview.
Brilliant, brilliant.
I just don't get it. I don't get his anger towards Chris Jones.
Yeah, Chris Jones is a nice fella.
Yeah, he's a good interviewer as well, Chris Jones.
I think Eddie kind of wanted to say something like, very Eddie-ish, like something which just a little bit of a zinger, a memorable comment, and he probably got it a bit wrong, and then he's forced to back up his comment, and he didn't seem like he'd really thought it through.
He was very frosty with Sonia McLaughlin on the television as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, we missed that.
I think he was very frustrated by the game, and I think he was bracing himself for all the TMO chat. He also was... various people were bringing up with him again the stuff that he'd said in the week beforehand, and his kind of approach was, look, I'm going to talk about the game now. If you want to talk about the other stuff, I'm not interested. I'll talk about the game. So then people asked him about the TMO, and he went, that's not nothing to do with me. The TMO's there to make a decision. He made a decision. So I think he was a bit frosty in general, but then just wanted to... And this is... On BT Sport, he did an interview recently with Ali Eakin, and he said, when I talk to you, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to my players. Because I'm fully aware that their families, their wives or whatever, they all hear this. They'll all tell them. If they don't see this, someone will tell them what I've said. So I'm giving them messages all the time. So he was... Him going so big on Mike Brown and going, all you media... Fair dinkum, all you media, you all think you can do a better job of selecting, and now when he's had a good game, you're all on the bandwagon. Mike Brown's been brilliant for 23 tests.
Well, he hasn't been brilliant, he's been good. I mean, he's okay.
Well, no, yeah. let's not get into that specific point. Let's not run through Mike Brown's last 23 tests.
No, let's go game by game.
So I think there's another. So on that note, I think there's another part to this, which is actually getting a message to the players that he was not happy with their performance overall.
Yeah, I'm amazed.
He's happy with the win, but not with the way it went. Because to go two tries up in the first 20 minutes and then be fighting for your life at the end of the game is probably not good enough.
Yeah, and if you work out like how hard the England coaches work, how hard he gets the England players to work, if you look at him in the stadium when he's absolutely losing his mind for stupid decisions that the England players have made, and then he goes and tells Chris Jones, I thought our backs were absolutely spot on.
No, he said Mike Brown was outstanding.
No, he said the backs were world class today.
His main point where he was saying, all you media.
Yeah, later
you,
on, you he think you can do. You think you start, can do? He says my backs were brilliant or world class today, and I don't think that's the message the England players will get when they go to training.
No, I'm sure it won't be. Will Howe said it was a bit, and I noticed this actually. Mm-hmm. Wales only had two penalties the whole game,
which is remarkably low.
It is remarkably low. And I know that Garces plays things quite loose at the breakdown, but I thought it was an absolute shambles, the breakdown. And also, I noticed Jerome Garces giving Wales like tutorials on the... Now, next time, remember, just do this. It was like, no, you're in an international cauldron here. Get on and blow the whistle or let the boys play.
As long as he's consistent for both sides, I don't see a problem with it.
He's done it before, but this is an interesting stat.
I mean, would you like to see more penalties? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'd rather not see a ref coaching players when it's England Wales in the Six Nations. If it's an infringement, give a penalty. Otherwise,
I mean, like, roll away isn't coaching, is it?
No, that's not giving them a tutorial. It was like after a breakdown, he was having a long chat with them. Anyway, England v Wales tied the lowest scoring Six Nations game ever in the Six Nations.
Is that right?
Yeah, the other one was Ireland v England, 6-12.
Amazing.
In 2013, Garces reffed both games.
Interesting.
So, I mean, it's clear Garces needs to be burned.
There was one... So there were a few penalties where I thought there was some inconsistency with the way it was refereed. So I think England could have had a few more penalties. With that said, probably not that many.
Mm.
And Wales deserve huge amount of credit for just the number of times that England got into the red zone and had phase after phase after phase.
Yeah.
Of pretty low risk, pretty limited rugby, presumably looking to draw out a penalty, and Wales did not bite at all.
Wales were remarkably good, actually.
There was one that I will mention with Garces that really annoyed me, though, which was when, I think it was one of the kickable penalties that Wales had, where the ball rolls out of the back of the ruck. Garces puts both hands in the air.
And then he penalises the guy.
Signalises ball out. Robshaw, I think it was, jumps on the ball. No, penalty. Like, that inconsistency is awful.
Yeah, that was terrible reffing.
Yeah.
It's out. Oh, no, not for you, it's not.
Yeah, no.
Kieran John tweeted us at Rugby Podcast and said he wasn't trying to whip up the whole TMO thing, but did say, it's interesting hearing the number of Welsh fans bemoaning the TMO, very quickly forgetting the benefit they got from it the week previous. And it did remind me that one of the phrases, one of the ways that I heard people on television, pundits and people and Welsh based people talking about it was, yeah, we probably got lucky on that forward pass for the Steph Evans try, but these things even themselves out over time.
Exactly. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. I wish the chat on the TMO could all stop.
So, well, I mean, we could make it stop, you know, on this podcast.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, you make a very good point.
We have
right
that
now.
Power.
You make a very good point. Right, before we get into why you were on a plane and what you've been up to. Robert Swain, or was it Richard Swain? I'll get the name. Was listening when you wanted to come up with a game for Shingler's List.
Oh, yes.
We had the name first, but we couldn't think of... JB came up with the idea with the name, and then we couldn't think of what to do with it. Well, Richard has come up with... Hold on a minute, where is it? Oh, for goodness sake.
Now, you told me the name of this game before...
Oh, I know what it's called, but before I got the questions, I saved it. I did it on the notes on my... Okay, it's called Laws and Order. It's just a name first. He said, here's a name for you, Laws and Order. He also said...
Is this to do with Courtney Laws?
Yes.
Even better.
He also said, and I couldn't think of a game for this one, but I've thought of one for Laws and Order, clock stopped and two smoking farrels.
Oh, there you go.
But I can't think of a game for that. I can think of one for Laws and Order. So it's a quick quiz.
Yes,
where
please.
We go over Courtney Laws' misdemeanours in the past.
Perfect.
So, Laws and Order, question number one. In the 2011 Rugby World Cup, Courtney Laws was fined £5,000. Why?
Was he really?
Yeah.
2011?
In the 2011 World Cup, 2011 World Cup, during a game, something happened, or there was some thing which meant he got a £5,000 fine.
Was it?
He wasn't alone in getting a fine, by the way.
What? Yeah, was it?
Girls in bedrooms?
No. was it unauthorised sponsorship on a gum shield? Or...
Correct, Philip Larkin.
Wow.
Correct. It was Manu Tuilagi, and then I think it was Lewis Moody and Courtney Laws. All got fined £5,000.
Bloody hell.
Wow. So it was an expensive tour for Manu Tuilagi, because presumably he got fined for jumping off the boat into the marina as well.
So I've got a question for you, right? Is this a good move for Manu Tuilagi to do those things? Because, yes, of course, it costs you money in fines. But when you're in the after-dinner speech circuit, at £5,000 the dinner...
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute. It's all of a sudden a very good business decision.
Yeah. You're right. So next question. This is not a misdemeanour or anything. But a Daily Mail journalist, after a particular tackle, said that Courtney Laws was the reason why parents don't want their children to play rugby. Who was he tackling? Who did he tackle that caused that response?
It is little Morgan Parra.
No, in the game you're thinking of, it was Jules Plisson that
yes.
smashed.
The Plisson one was just, we treated him like a rag doll.
Yes.
He's absolutely destroyed Morgan Parra before as well.
2-0 to Phil. How many red cards has Courtney had in his professional career?
Two.
Ooh, I was going to go for two as well. One.
None.
Really?
And final question, which is worth 2 points. In the 2011 World Cup, Courtney Laws was suspended. Well, just prior to the 2011 World Cup, he was suspended for 2 weeks for a knee to the back of Argentine hooker Mario Ledesma, which meant he missed England's opening two pool games against Tier 2 nations. Can you name the two Tier 2 nations?
Which year?
2011. So it was the opening two pool games in the World Cup. It was two Tier 2 nations.
They played Scotland and Argentina, but they're not Tier 2 nations.
Also, it was in the Argentina. It was in the first match. And he missed the next two.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, Ledesma.
And... Tonga, no. Hang on, where was this?
This was New Zealand.
New Zealand.
2011.
Not Canada. Not Romania. USA and Fiji.
USA and Fiji, and Phil's going for...
I think USA is right, but not Fiji.
No, because hang on, Fiji...
I'm going to go USA and Tonga.
It is Romania and Georgia.
Oh, wow. God, completely wrong.
Wow. Tell you what, you fast forward 8 years, and that's a bloody hard pull now.
To the two teams we went to see in our Tier 2 tour last year during the Six Nations tournament. What an incredible segue this is. And what have you boys been doing in Madrid? Well, I mean, as we speak now, it's right. 20 past one in the morning.
So I'll tell you exactly what we're doing. But before we do that, tell everyone about Cornerstone.
Cornerstone? The best razor you can get, we believe, and we believe you'll agree if you take us up on our amazing offer that we can give to you a beautiful... Cornerstone razor delivered to you in a presentation box with a cartridge full of six razors and a free engraved aluminium heavy weighty metal shaft. None of this plastic nonsense that some of Cornerstone's Johnny Come Lately competitors try and flog you. This is the real deal. And for £4 is what you can get it for because you listen to us. We've got this great deal for you. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. No obligation. We think you'll want to continue though. So for just £4, less than a pint, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg 10 at checkout.
Do remember Egg 10 at checkout.
Oh, well, what a week we've had. So, we have got our live show, which is coming up. Now, there are a few things about the live show.
On our Tier 2 tour.
On the Tier 2 tour, okay? We only do one of these things a year. They're extremely special, and it's a bit of a thank you back to all the people that listen to us and support us, you know, continually year-round. So, last year, we hit on what we think is a winning idea, which was to do the show in the morning before the game, and then everyone goes to the game, which is easy when it's a 3 o'clock game.
The game being Spain-Germany this year.
Yes. Yeah.
Which was the deciding Romania v Georgia last year.
Correct. It's a little bit more difficult when the game kicks off at 12:30, which means we needed a 10:30 start. So after agreeing...
Which, with time difference, is 11:30 a.m. UK time.
No, 9:30. Okay. So,
Oh, right, yeah, so, yeah, got you.
There's a couple of licensing issues, and it turns out that I need to head over to Spain to iron a few things out. So we get over there, and it turns out having a live show at 10:30 in the morning is not only highly illegal to the Spanish authorities in that area of Spain, but it's also highly improbable anyone's going to make it. We didn't even get up till 10:30.
Is it some religious thing because it's a Sunday?
Don't know.
So there are places open, but I think it's special licensing. So
yeah.
So this place, the place that we are using, O'Neill's, can't even let people into their building until 12:30.
Yeah, we were like, can you serve us coffees? Nope, absolutely not. We can't do any of that stuff.
Wow.
So me and Phil got our walking boots on, and you know, according to my pedometer, we did something like 25,000 steps. That was on Saturday, going bar to bar. And you won't believe this, Tim, but 250 people are a lot of people. It's a substantial amount of people.
It is.
Not as substantial as the charges levied by hotels if you want to use their conferencing facilities. So we're going, we're basically going from hotel to hotel saying conferencing facility, otherwise known as Sala.
Oh,
Confidenciants or something?
Muchos beers.
Yeah. No. Email, phone a number. So we did find some alternative venues. Then we went back, and then the next morning when we woke up at 10:30, inadvertently, thinking, fuck, oh, sorry, thinking, oh no, in 4 weeks' time we're going to have to do a live show. This is a little bit of a realisation for us that...
And that was after a relatively quiet night and a full day of working.
Yes, a very quiet night by normal standards. We thought, maybe we should move it. So, here is the update which you all want to know about. We are going to all watch the games on the Saturday
on
in
Saturday.
O'Neill's.
Okay. So, the two matches that are on the Saturday.
Yeah, we are going to nerd out and prepare. Then we are all on the Sunday... Going to go to the game. It kicks off at 12:30, which will come round pretty sharpish on a hangover.
Yeah, and we did have a nice little stroll out to the stadium.
We'll talk about that in a minute. What a stadium.
The pictures look good.
Oh, it's beautiful there. It really is. So
how close to the city centre is that?
No, I think 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's about £10 in a taxi. You could walk it from the centre, but it's about... 2 miles,
and
3 miles, something
like
that. Like,
so right by the university minutes. Campus, the parks, that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yes, the stadium's pretty cool. Then we're going to go and watch the games, and then everyone can pile back, and that Wales game will be on TV in the venue. Watch the Wales game, and then shortly after
the conclusion of that,
we will show up with our 250 people there, and away we will go. So... The kickoff now for the live show is 6:30 in the evening on Sunday.
We'll put it all on our Facebook page.
Now, I will say, advanced apologies if you booked with the intention of going home early on Sunday and this might be a problem for you. If that is the case, we'll try and make it up to you. We'll certainly refund it.
Let's deal with this on Facebook because we're talking to a very small number of people there. But the
250, actually.
But I'm more curious about Madrid and rugby.
Oh, mate. I tell you now, it's one of the best stadiums. I mean... I'd say the best. You know, it isn't the Millennium Stadium. It doesn't have a roof. It will hold about 12,000. But it's something so quaint about it. It's obviously built quite a while ago.
Yeah, and it's just in a nice... it's a relatively quiet area, but nice leafy surroundings. And just a very lovely pitch. The pitch was in great condition.
It's like it's all kind of manicured hedges around the sides.
Yeah.
It's, I tell you what, it's going to be brilliant. So during the week of panic, which I've endured now, I have reached out to quite literally tens of people around Spain. Now, tens doesn't sound many, but you know, try fielding like 80 different Facebook messages, because this is what I'm doing. I'm stalking people on Facebook now, trying to find who's involved with Spanish rugby at a club level and sending them, you know, private messages. So we get there, and would you believe it? One of the guys I've been privately messaging is taking his little referee group out, and they're all having espressos discussing the Spain versus Russia game.
Yes.
Yesterday. So, yeah, we're already fairly notorious in the Madrid rugby community for...
for hassling referees when they're trying to enjoy an espresso on a Sunday morning.
Oh, you're JB.
You had that reaction a couple of times, actually, this weekend.
So one of the cool things about the change of time could be, well, we can just extend an invitation to the German Rugby Federation and the Spanish rugby and just say, hey, if you want to come and join us.
You make it sound like I've not already done that.
Or, yeah, well, yeah, exactly, we can.
Or
the skippers of both sides, come and be a guest at the podcast.
I'm pretty sure I could manage that. I can manage both things.
The third half in O'Neill.
Yeah, and the special surprise is still on.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be an amazing event. And the more I think about it, the better it is. The time is at half six, quarters past six, whatever it is. So there you go. But I tell you what, it's just such a cool town. It's such a cool town. The stadium's great. The guys who we encountered around the stadium, you know, if you like rugby in Spain, you really like rugby in Spain. It's an absolute cult sport. And they reckon they're going to get 12,000 there.
Wow.
12,000. And they were pretty confident. It's not like, yeah, we might not. 12,000. So it's going to be hell of an afternoon.
So we got this message here saying, rank the fans in fancy dress. From best to worst. You've got your English fans in chainmail. You've got your Scotland fans who, on one part, they do the Braveheart thing, and others do just the See You Jimmy, the little tartan hats with the orange hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Welsh fans in daffodil headgear, and Irish fans, some of them wear the leprechaun hat. You don't see too many of them, Guinness hats as well. And the tricolour Afro wigs, which seem to be everywhere.
No,
France fans.
I'm sorry. There's only. Well, I know who's number one in the fancy dress stakes, and none of the ones which you've just mentioned.
Oh, go on.
It's the mental French person that brings an actual cockerel to the game.
Oh yes.
I don't, as a chicken owner myself, I can't tell you how cool that is. I mean, that's brilliant.
Did they spray one? No, that's just the big on the plinth in Trafalgar Square was blue. I was thinking there was a blue cockerel at some point, but no, that's not right.
Yeah,
no,
that would be some kind of animal cruelty.
But I was going to say, but I'm sure Peter would have an issue with the cockerel at the rugby grounds. But yeah, every home game they have it.
I'm pretty sure I could spray one of my chickens blue and no one would say anything about it. It's my chicken at the end of the day. So that's number one. Daffodils last.
Daffodils last, absolutely.
Yeah, good chainmail. Like, if you've really gone to town with your chainmail and it's actually made out of real chainmail, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
What's the other? Scottish? Oh, fine.
Scottish.
It's not entirely clear that they are in fancy dress when they come as that Jimmy character. In fact, we were caught on a...
what do you mean?
I mean, we were caught on a train.
Oh, my God.
We were caught on a train to Glasgow.
Extending our story to Madrid a little bit more, because some of the details around the licensing have only just emerged this week, we kind of booked the flights to Madrid at very, very short notice, as in we only booked them Friday afternoon, which meant that all of the flights from and to Manchester were sold out. So we had to fly out of Glasgow and fly back to Liverpool.
£100 taxi back from Liverpool, £75 train tickets
up to
Glasgow, but, 3.5 hour train.
But
let me just say, and they're regaling this story at 1:30 in the morning. This is the lengths we go to bring you a podcast.
But the train up to Glasgow on Friday night, there was a very he's probably a stereotypical, if you rolled all of the negative Scottish stereotypes together.
This is our guy. You've nailed him.
The people I know from Scotland are nothing like this chap. He was a bit of a nightmare.
And he was singing sectarian football songs. He from both teams!
Yeah, he was singing both Rangers and Celtic songs.
The guy next to us was a football fan. Normal Scottish chap. He's like, he's singing both sets of songs.
Well, you know, he's equally offensive to all parties. That's very thoughtful of him.
Yeah,
yeah. And there was a few other things about taking drugs.
Taking drugs through his genitals. I mean, that is his favourite pastime.
Charming.
Taking drugs through his genitals. There was quite a few comments about his parents' genitalia as well.
Yeah, your dad's got a small something or other. Oh, no, my dad's
My dad.
And he got up, right as we got into Glasgow, he got up and apologised to everyone for... if you were that aware of it, I mean...
Yeah, interested.
And they kept serving him beer, which is amazing.
Let's get on to that game then. Because that's the best game of the tournament so far, wasn't it? Scotland-France.
I would say it's the best 20 minutes of the tournament so far.
Oh, but the game, the power shift.
The ebbing and flowing and the tension.
Yeah. Oh, France's first 20 minutes was...
sensational.
Was brilliant.
Teddy Thomas suddenly looks like a proper player again.
Yeah.
He's amazing, isn't
he's brilliant.
He's only 24.
What?
Yeah, he's only 24.
Those two centres were superb. Boxies had good moments and bad moments.
Yeah.
The depth of scrum halves that France have as well is...
ludicrous.
Is incredible.
It really is. On the Boxies, one of my favourite moments was when he used his Jedi powers. Did you notice that bit?
No.
It just seemed to sort of... I think a Scottish player must have nudged it with their foot, but on the television it just looks like he put out his hand and the ball he sucked the ball towards him through midair. So that's why they've picked him.
He's amazing. I keep saying that. I've said that about a few players today, but he really is. I tell you, the other guy I love is Chavoncy. Is that the... Hang on, let me get that right.
Chavoncy's the 13.
No, scrap that. Demiroo.
No, sorry. Chavoncy was last week's 12. Lamarat was this week's 13. Damaru
is the guy that I like.
Dumaru.
I just love how he runs. He runs like he intends to go through that gap, come hell or high water.
And Gerardo's just doesn't deserve to be on a losing team all the time. Yeah. The man's a hero.
Tell you what,
he's brilliant.
They're two scores away from being unbeaten.
Yeah.
I mean, Johnny Sexton being who he is, effectively cost them the first game.
Yeah.
And they were in it right until the end.
So. But again, if France want to take it... control of what they can control, their discipline is absolutely awful.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was awful in the Ireland game as well.
Yeah, I thought Var Mahina would have sorted that.
Conditioning seems to be an issue as well. I don't know,
is that true?
I don't know. Well, you just look at it and go, they looked that they had, as the game wore on, they just get less, you just think they're less and less likely to win.
Yeah.
And other teams get on top.
Yeah.
I felt watching that they weren't fit enough to play how they wanted to play.
They
could play that for 20 minutes, half an hour, and then they dropped off, and they did a little bit in the second half, but not to the same extent.
So, shockingly, and this is shocking, I think France's fragility is all mental. And I say that because against Ireland, fitness wasn't a problem. They were tackling their little hearts out. I think when they go behind and they can't attack in the way that they thought they could, that's when their heads go down and they start to look a little bit lethargic. The actual fitness itself doesn't seem to be as much of a problem as I thought it would be with the Ireland match in mind.
Oh, I think it is. I think trying to play that expansive, offloading, attacking game is far more draining than the defensive position. Particularly the way that Ireland were playing when it was all one-out rugby.
Yeah.
It's easier to defend. It's much less draining to defend that. So we've spoken about France. Let's talk about Scotland, because they started so badly.
Yeah,
they did.
And seeing those two tries,
the man of the match, i.e. Gregor Townsend.
Greg Laidlaw.
He got man of the match, but I'm not entirely sure he deserved it.
Oh, I thought he did.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he did. And what a difference a week makes. Ali Price is an excellent player and has been really good at club level. He's untested, hasn't had a lot of time at international level. And the difference just a cool, calm head makes in a key position.
So, first 20, there's one breakdown where Greg Laidlaw, right, just looks at this ruck and he carries on looking at it over and over again, does not pick up the ball. Eventually France, you know, catch her breath, go through through the ruck, pick up the ball. Obviously he's at fault for one of the tries. He just should have dived on the ball. I thought he made quite a few mistakes, particularly early on. His kicking was good, of course, and later on he grew into the game, but I wasn't completely convinced.
Fly half as well.
Yeah, if you cite a couple of mistakes, which he did make, but in international rugby everyone's going to make mistakes, but just on his kicking alone, he could have been man of the match. His kicking was exceptional, and his kicking won them the game, but he did more than that. Some of his distribution was excellent. His assist for the Hugh Jones try was excellent.
He's a big old boy, isn't he?
Of his kicking out of hand was brilliant. Yeah. And very importantly, when Finn Russell was a bit all over the place...
He really was.
He went to 10 for the last 10 minutes, and that was when Scotland took the lead.
I wonder if he's better suited to that 10 role, because that's where he started his career.
Do you reckon Racing are going to want a bit of a refund on Finn Russell?
No.
It was hard to work out what was dodgier, Finn Russell's performance or Dave Denton's hair.
I think Racing are fully signed up to the Finn Russell show, because isn't that not what they like? Moody, erratic tens. I mean, this should be a marriage made in heaven.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, Jack tweeted us at Rugby Podcast.
Jack. As in Twitter's Jack, yeah? At Jack.
I don't know if it was that Jack. His name's Jack. Is Finn Russell the biggest Warren Gatland vindication for the Lions? As in, you know, there was a big eyebrows raised and question marks with him not going. And Launchbury the biggest shout as a mistake? I don't think you can pick on one performance. But
single game.
But Finn Russell does have... He doesn't have that consistent level of performance. He's incredible, and he has the capacity, as he was today or yesterday. He can have an absolute howler.
Yeah, you can. Gatland? Don't know. No,
it doesn't help that they don't have another option.
Yeah, Gatland can do what he wants because he's Warren Gatland. He's the greatest, probably one of the greatest rugby minds of a generation. He does what he wants. Finn Russell is erratic. That's what you get. Probably on his day, when he's going forward, he's as good as anyone.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Two erratic tens, though, make for a very entertaining game.
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
they were kind of like mirror images of each other.
They were.
Yeah. If you've not seen the Lionel Boxis volley in midair against Bath, please go and watch it, because it's just so glorious.
Volley in midair?
Have you not seen it?
I'm trying to think.
The clearance volley?
I can't recall it.
All right.
I can remember his controlling the ball.
Ah, so that's against Bath as well.
Was it?
So one week he's playing fullback and the ball is in the air. And instead of catching it like, you know, you would do, he basically just volleys it up and catches it, right?
Oh, sorry.
If you then look at the return fixture against Bath in the same competition, the scrum half is at the back of a maul or back of a ruck, fires the ball towards him underneath his own post. Does he catch it? No. He goes to volley it straight away.
Lionel Boxy's fail kick versus Bath.
It's so good. It's so... I've never seen anything like it.
Is it that one?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Isn't it like he's standing back in the position of like an NFL punter?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Alan Rowlands is the referee there. He's like, I've never seen anything like that.
Referees don't look like that anymore, do they?
Sadly not.
Remember when referees are all grey and old?
Yeah.
What's down there? That is pure French class.
Oh, come on, I want to see the actual fail kick.
It's amazing.
Better show me this.
No, you've got to go forward a bit. Because they should... Oh, you just missed it.
Sorry, I got it, got it, got it.
Here you go, watch this. Mine!
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So the scrum halves... Do you know what? Actually, I'm going to stick up for Boxes. He identified the fact that the scrum half had passed such a horrible looping pass to him that by the time he got to him, there were already two Bath players on him.
Yeah.
So he thought, I'm not going to have time to catch this and kick. I need to just kick it. But completely kicked it.
I wonder, like, when he was swinging that ball and he thinks, if I connect with this sweetly... What is going to happen? I mean, it's, yeah. What are the positive outcomes?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sorry, Phil, have you seen this?
No.
There you are. Enjoy it.
What is it?
It's my Hawaii Harlequins Cup.
When they tweeted us saying, I hope you boys enjoyed your tankards, they said tankards.
Oh, I don't know why they said tankards, because if there was more than one, you'd obviously have one.
Right.
Awesome.
So that's one third yours anyway, Phil. So come round on Mondays, Thursdays and Friday afternoons.
Yeah, we'll do weekly rotations for it.
I think I might slice off my third, melt it down and create a much smaller tankard for me.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
Just before we finish on this game, one other point. Paul O'Connell. So, I like Paul O'Connell. I actually really like Paul O'Connell as a pundit.
I like him. I like the fact he talks in slow motion so you can really digest what he's saying.
Very slow.
He says what he means. He means what he says. Yeah.
There's times where he gets a bit distracted. Like the John Lacey lives around the corner from me comment.
He's got a nice hedge.
It was his comment on John Lacey. The only thing was he's a good Munsterman. He lives around the corner from me.
Lives around the corner from me. He's got a nice hedge.
Paint the picture.
Yeah. Really. Oh, okay.
Brilliant. Then that one. Okay. Good Munsterman.
But just a little shout for Jamie Batty, the cow murderer.
No, cow massacre expert.
Cow massacre expert.
Yeah.
Dave Denton was actually really good. Didn't expect to see him in a Scotland shirt.
Dave Denton's a good player.
Yeah.
When he doesn't have to think about things. He's very... he's physically gifted. He's as strong as an ox.
He's enormous. He's quick. And he's very, very strong.
Yeah.
He's just... Yeah, he's not got the full all-round thinking game, I don't think.
Maybe he is one of these guys who is just maybe too good to be any good.
PSB syndrome.
Yeah, I'm too talented. Why should I work hard?
Exactly.
But Scotland needed that because they could have been staring down the barrel at a pretty horrible Six Nations if that hadn't gone their way.
Yeah.
Do you think Scotland can bother England?
Yeah, at Murrayfield, yes.
Oh,
at Twickenham,
sure they can,
no. I think they'd get battered at Twickenham, but... I think, yeah, they could.
I mean, we were watching the Australia game, weren't we, in Nice, Hard Life.
Yeah.
And we were watching that and we're thinking the England-Scotland game this year is going to be one of the great games. But because of the slight disappointment of the Scotland-Wales game,
yeah,
from a Scottish point of view, it's kind of dampened it.
I was expecting that to be one of the great games, Scotland-Wales, but...
Were we?
Yeah, as in two teams that want to play rugby, open attacking rugby, and I thought Scotland had a real chance of turning them over.
Yeah, so downfall 2018 was predicated on Scotland winning, which I just think is a distant dream now, and Ireland winning. But I think France could beat them.
France is a very
Scotland and France away. That's
they're tough.
It didn't seem tough when the fixtures first came out.
I expect England to grind out wins, but they're it's not a given.
Yeah, well, that is one of the positives. I know we've done the England game. One of the positives that Eddie Jones said himself was, like, good teams win when they don't play their best.
Yes, I completely agree. Now, do we want to talk about Ireland?
Yeah.
But before we do, I just want to let people know that you may not be aware, but Rugby World Cup 2019 tickets are available for to enter, register yourself for the ballot for tickets.
Does it not close tomorrow?
Yeah, now some of those ballot tickets close for tomorrow. So I think that's the ones where it's like team and stadium packs. So you could either base yourself at one stadium if you wanted to and get a bunch of tickets for one stadium, or equally you could put yourself in to get every game for one particular team if you wanted to follow one team around Japan, your team, let's say.
So are you going to go? Are you just going to be a boring old England supporter? Are you going to do something interesting?
Oh no, I think I would. I'm contemplating various ways that I'm going to.
Are you going to take two teams? As in
me?
Yeah, as in obviously, yeah, it's hard not to support England when if they were to get to a final or something like that. But
oh yeah,
a tier two team maybe.
Oh well, the Blossoms, all over them.
Yeah, so I'm all over. Blossoms. I'm going to be all over USA, of course. It's important to me that freedom wins.
So. USA is good because they're in England's group, so you'd get England, France, Argentina, and Tonga.
Have you got a tier two nation for the World Cup?
USA sounds good to me.
I want to see Georgia do well.
Georgia would be good. Spain, if Spain make it.
So
Spain, who still got a chance at making it.
Who beat Russia this weekend.
Yep.
In Russia, very important.
Well, I mean, I tell you who might be, probably, got a chance. Who you probably can't support is Canada. Because
they still have a chance, don't they?
Through the repechage.
Repechage.
I hate that word. yes, because they lost to the USA this weekend. Hmm. So they're on the back of three-game losing streak now.
Yeah, at least three games in the last 3 weeks.
Someone has got to answer some questions regarding Canada rugby, because not so long ago, they were the emerging power in rugby. It's fairly widely played.
They very nearly beat Wales at one point, I seem to remember, in the Arms Park.
And they're just not developing. They've been overtaken by
Millennium Stadium, whatever.
By all of the... not all of the other... America's nations, but the American nations are improving rapidly, with the exception of Canada, and people are not particularly happy about it.
Well,
rugbyworldcup.com, if you're interested in tickets for the Rugby World Cup in Japan, one of the ballots is closing imminently, and there are other ways to get tickets, but all the information is right there, so we don't need to miss out, so just giving you a heads up on that one.
Right, so
Ireland, Italy.
Oh yeah, of course. We thought,
yeah.
Ireland won a game. I mean, they won a game. They did it well. They scored a lot of tries. I'm not sure what I learned about Ireland from this game.
Good execution. I think we probably learned more about Italy than we did about Ireland. Ireland played very well.
There's one little parallel, which. So there's been loads of people saying, oh, Rob Carney's, you know, he's maybe a bit long in the tooth now. Maybe they need to look to the future, pick Jordan Lama. There's a lot of... And it is Lama. We had this on the last podcast. It's not Lamore, it's Lama. Anyway.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was because I said Lamore as a joke. That's Lamore.
That's Lamore. Right.
So, no, it's not Lamore. No, cool. It's Lamore. It's Lama.
Lama, like suit of armour.
Yeah.
But equally, there's a lot. There has been a lot of people saying, Mike Brown, blah blah blah. But the point is, if you want to put in Lama or you want to put in Anthony Watson, fullback or whatever, you've got to drop. In England's case, Mike Brown. In Ireland's case, you've got to drop Rob Carney, who's got how many 70 Test caps? Outstanding player and
very solid,
incredibly solid, and just battle hardened men. I like what Ireland are about with the number of caps they've got. Much like England, the number of caps they've got, but they're also introducing gradually these new faces.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on, Jay. What you got?
One of the advantages of just going on the beers with one of you two for a weekend is you start talking about stupid things. And I think there's something in this idea. You mentioned caps for Rob Carney. When do caps become too many caps?
As in physically having caps?
Yeah, as in when does a team reach its tipping point when too many caps becomes...
Right. Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to be like, well, you can only wear one at once, so... If you're going to start strapping them to your knees and elbows, you can...
yeah, not that.
Shoulder pads.
So we gave the example of the South Africa team, which was highly rated because they had almost, I think, more caps than any other team in international history.
In 2015,
yeah.
This is.
And they got beat by Japan. And that's because they were probably getting a bit older, you could say.
Yes.
So when do caps become too many caps? And when does a player kind of go past that balance and maybe, you know... Is 70 caps perfect?
I say each player's different.
Mm.
Each position's different as well.
Yeah, each position. And it depends when you first get capped because it's probably more age. There is going to be a tipping point when you...
But definitely for the teams it makes sense.
When you start depreciating in terms of physical performance.
Mm.
Unless you're like Justin Gatlin. And you're just juiced up to the max all the time.
Mm, that's what I would do.
And still running PBs at 34.
Good lad.
Do you remember when, during the last Olympics, Justin Gatlin was running and the commentator on the radio said, called him Warren Gatland.
Oh, yeah.
Justin Gatlin, Warren Gatland.
10.4 for Warren Gatland.
His heels are much better. Shattered heels. Yeah, there is definitely a tipping point. It's interesting because I think... So, Ireland have managed it. Probably the player I'm thinking of, Heaslip, who was number eight for such a long period of time and isn't there now. He's still...
That's because of injury, but...
And he will be back.
But even when he is back...
Do you think he'll be back for Ireland?
No.
No, I don't.
I don't know
Conan
yet.
Conan looks
I don't know
a
about
proper
that.
Player.
Yeah, Conan. Well, Conan's very good. And CJ Stander is so good.
I mean, he might make a squad for a World Cup.
Well, let's see how he goes for Leinster when he returns. I mean, that'll be the giveaway.
So, key takeaways from this game, for me. Ireland...
This is Jordan Lama.
Yeah, that's his new song. By the way, his footwork is ridiculous, as we talked about before.
We saw a glimpse of it this weekend.
Sorry, Phil.
Yeah.
No, you can do that. Hey, mate, I'm all for that.
Key takeaways. Ireland did exactly what they had to. Conor Murray, the whole back line looked very good. Jack Conan looked very good coming in. Stockers finished his tries very well.
One Ireland fan has taken umbrage with us saying Stockers, by the way.
Really?
To which I said, no, sorry.
Dales?
It's the same. It's like Daly? Sippers, Banners, Stockers. It's just what you're getting.
What's he saying?
She just said, oh, please don't call him Stockers. I hate you calling him Stockers.
It's such a term of affection, though.
It is. That's what I mean.
I'm one of his biggest fans.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. Stockdale. Young Jacob. took his tries brilliantly. I think probably the most important thing we can learn about Ireland from this game is the two injuries. Henshaw, who looks like it's a bad arm shoulder injury after scoring his second try.
Yeah.
And... the Furlong injury.
Mm.
Now, we've not got any news on how bad those two are, but...
Didn't look good.
They're two key players. They're two real key players. And they're... So, the Henshaw is even more key if Ringrose is still out, which I believe he will be.
Yep.
Because you've not got a direct 13 to go in there then. Unless you can use one of the younger Munster lads, or you could use... Marshall or Cave or someone like that. But
McCloskey at 12 and Bundiaki out to 13.
It's a bit of a square peg round hole. Yeah. And
they just don't fancy McCloskey either. I think that's pretty obvious by now.
That probably, we spoke last week about the limitations of not having a ball playing 12, and that's, you're even further down the road into not having a ball playing 12 if you take that route.
Yeah, you need something.
Yeah.
Other takeaways. Well, they do have a lot of ability to chop and change players. Conor Murray made a great line-out jumper. this weekend. And also,
I missed that.
Just want to mention Sergio Parise's one-handed line-out throw was awesome. He took a quick line-out, but he did this amazing underarm fizzed spiral throw. It was probably about the one good thing he did the whole game. It was an oddly quiet game for Parise.
He got that assist with the bounce pass assist.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but apart from that, nothing really.
But one bit that I thought was great, we talked about Wonderhill's try-saving tackle. Keith Earls, in the final minute of the game, when they were 56-19 up.
Yeah.
Gassing it back.
Yeah.
70 metres. The effort still, when the game was already been won many, many times ago, and no one would have known if he hadn't gone for it as hard as he did.
Yeah.
He's having a good tournament as well.
He's playing really well at the moment, Keith Earls. Yeah. He's justified in his selection. And the Italian player I'm most enjoying, Minozzi.
Yeah.
The tiny fullback.
Mm.
He is electric. Italy have got a few very good players. We mentioned them last week. I just worry about their depth and the quality across the board, and particularly as they pick up injuries throughout the tournament.
When was their last Six Nations win?
In Scotland, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2015 Scotland.
2015, yeah. And it was at Murrayfield as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Their strategy of tiring out the opponents by letting them score loads of tries seems to be working there. Because they got three late tries themselves, didn't they?
Yeah, rope a dope trick. Yeah.
They're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to know what to learn out of the Italy performances.
But now
we've seen every team play a couple of times. Yeah, I am more worried about France going to France than I was.
Yeah, I'm way more worried about France than I ever thought I would be.
Yes,
as well.
Agreed.
Yeah, and they've lost two games, which is remarkable.
Hey, in terms of international rugby, have you seen the dates have been confirmed for the autumn internationals? Week 3 is the one you need to look at. Week 3, 10th of November, England versus New Zealand.
Wow.
Interesting.
It's in the diary.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's quite exciting.
Yeah, it's happening. This is not a drill. So there might be other things we can pick the boat. Normally we keep an absolute hard black and white line between Six Nations podcast and the domestic podcast. We will be back for a domestic podcast, but we might get some injury news, and there might be some other things that you boys can remember.
when we've had a few hours sleep.
Yeah, exactly. But I think at this point, at the time, 1:57 a.m.
Yes.
We should go and get some sleep.
Four hours until my alarm.
Let the boys sleep.
Ugh. Yes.
Oh, no, not yet. Give me the Tier 2 results, please.
Oh, just shut that page down.
So, as we know, Spain beat Russia in Russia.
In Russia, 2013.
Controversial time.
Georgia beat Belgium something like 47-0.
So here's a question. How many Belgians died that day?
I think it was... So it was 47-0. I think it was just 7 penalty tries.
Yes. About
wow.
That.
And then Romania hammered Germany. So Romania lost to Germany, surprisingly, last year. But they hammered them this year.
Yeah,
86-3 or something like that.
Not particularly good going on in Germany at the moment. There was a Facebook post on their... Facebook page. And... it's about player engagement. It's not a happy camp, which is a shame because they were doing very, very well in Scotland.
And they've got the best kit, one of the best kits in international
they
rugby.
They did have one of the best kits in international rugby.
They've gone from Adidas to Macron now.
Oh, wow.
So it's still nice,
but
yeah.
Macron are better than they were.
The picture I saw it was the Romania-Germany.
Don't worry about it because they didn't look too bad in this picture because of the Romanian kit, which is horrendous.
It's a Mizuno shirt with the... so it's all yellow, apart from the top, from the shoulders to the lower pectorals is like the Romanian flag.
Yes, yeah, it's horrific. So leading the clubhouse comfortably with their kit in Tier 2 now is Georgia.
Yeah.
Oh, that. Especially their...
it's a great kit.
Yeah, the white and gold.
Although Russia had one of the great kits.
Oh, I've just looked at the Romania kit. That is horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
No, that's bad.
Russia had an amazing red kit. In fact, you own it.
I own it, yeah.
We should put it up in the dungeon somewhere.
No, I quite like wearing that.
I think we should put it up in the dungeon. right, now you can do whatever you want to do.
I want to go to bed.
Yeah,
let me go to bed.
Let's go to bed.
Let the boys sleep.
All right, and so hit subscribe and keep your ears and eyes out for a domestic podcast coming here soon.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.